No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, another episode of Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root, and this show, unlike our all Cardinals shows, when we bring on Seth Cox to talk about the previous game, and so far this season, it's been almost all things that are good with the Cardinals. This is our preview show, as in week four, the Arizona Cardinals will take on the St. Louis Rams at home. Completing kind of the first quarter of the season where they opened the season with three of their first four games at home. Playing two of their six division games. Already got one out of the way against the San Francisco 49ers with the 47-7 win. And this weekend, we play the Rams, or as we've begun to know them, as the St. Louis quarterback assassins. And to preview the matchup for this weekend, I brought in 3K from Turf Show Times, our SB Nation St. Louis Rams sister site. A guy who, if you've been following the show for some time, Joe and I, 3K and I, have had some great interviews over the past couple of seasons, and we bring him on. 3K, how is it going today?
It's going great. I just find it very coincidental, Jess, that here you are, 3-0, and now you decide to have me on. You could have had me on any other week, but oh no, now that you guys are in front of the NFC West and I happen to run the Rams blog, now, sure, coincidentally, it makes sense to have you on.
Well, so tell me about this. Why is it that the Rams managed to kill all the quarterbacks? I mean, they managed to do it twice last year to the Cardinals. So granted, Carson Palmer, nothing really happened because he just sort of fell over in his knee. But Drew Stanton, you basically killed. Then, you know, just to remind the Cardinals and their fans what the Rams can do, you go and take out Ben Roethlisberger, which actually is pretty beneficial to the Cardinals since they're going to be playing Pittsburgh here in a couple of weeks. So we sort of thank you for that, but it was just another reminder of when we play the Rams, somebody gets hurt. The last three outings it's been Drew Stanton last time, then Carson Palmer the previous time, and then the year before it was Tyrann Mathieu. What is it about the Rams that makes everyone get hurt?
It's just the pressure. It's constant pressure. I mean, even if you go back to week one against Seattle where the Rams had six sacks, five of them came out of the defensive line and one came out of the blitz package. That weekend it was LaMarcus Joyner. But Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator, has no problems using an aggressive blitz package the entirety of the game and attacking offensive line every angle, whether that's linebackers, members of the secondary, or even stacking up some unusual looks among the defensive front. The Rams, as much as everybody knows them for the four and now five first round picks on the defensive line, they rotate in a lot of other guys like Ethan Westbrooks and William Hayes, as well as Eugene Sims, who's on the injury report. It's a name to track, but he's one of the two main backup defensive ends, and they've been incredibly productive, Hayes and Sims, for the last couple of years with the Rams. So it's not just the big names up front that everybody knows with Aaron Donald, Robert Quinn, Chris Long. It's the depth, too, and that depth allows them to attack teams the entirety of a game, all four quarters, and it really does wear on teams. And, you know, sometimes if that's an injury, I never want to see injuries from anybody, but it does have an effect on the game when quarterbacks just don't feel comfortable executing a game plan.
Well, and The whole thing with Greg Williams being the defensive coordinator with such a physical defense, Cardinals fans remember Greg Williams for not so happy times with the whole bounty gate and everything. Is there any talk of the rumor or the thought of that Williams is kind of bringing that same sort of thing? Because Greg Williams is kind of a dirty word kind of around here, especially what happened. Basically his Saints team basically ended Kurt Warner's career, and we still feel a little bit bad about that.
Yeah, and the problem is there's no real separation from Bountygate, which is, you know, this system of paying people to hurt, you know, opposing players, and then what you could say would be the Greg Williams style of football, which is aggressive physical football. On one hand, you've got one that, let's say, breaks the rules. On the other, you've got essentially the centerpiece of, football defense is trying to negate what people do in the power game, power run and power blocking. It's a weird dichotomy for me, and I'm not really all that passionate about Greg Williams, personally, in terms of what he brings as a defensive coordinator, but I've always found it weird that, you know, if he hadn't been paying his players to hurt people, it's not the physicality that really upsets people, really, you know, it's just the idea of what you're paying them to do, which is go out and specifically hurt them. If they happen to get hurt like Ben Roethlisberger, then somehow the entire approach is, you know, acceptable, and I think that's a weird duality to try to deal with. I can understand why not just Cardinals fans, but a ton of other fans would hate to have to face Greg Williams and would hate to have to deal with somebody who, you know, approached the game with that kind of casual indifference to, let's say, rules. But at the same time, you can see where the spirit is coming from and what he wants out of a defense, and it's easy to understand why people would get behind that.
So let's go to the comments that I heard from Tyrann Mathieu just a couple of days ago. He says, you look at the Rams roster and you wonder why they're not a Super Bowl team. How would you respond to that?
I wouldn't. I would lower my head and go in the corner and wait for the game, because there's nothing to say. The Rams just don't get results, right? And it's kind of, you know, it revisits what Bruce Arians said about Jeff Fisher last year after the 12-6 win, which, of course, the Rams had last week, a 12-6 loss against the Steelers, is that they just don't get results. And to a degree, he's right. On paper, they're a very well-built team. They've got everything you need on defense to compete, and when you hold the Steelers to 12 points, that's what you want. The problem is when you can only score 6 points and you can't get a single touchdown, something's wrong beyond just the personnel, right? It's not just, oh, we don't have the players. They've drafted players. Every single player that's on the team now has been drafted in, pretty much. The free agency additions are so limited in terms of what they're contributing because of the haul they had from the Robert Griffin III deal, and because you've had the same GM and head coach in place who have been able to take their guys for the last 4 years. So it's just not the kind of issue where you say, oh, it's about the personnel, because they got to select them, and they're still starting, and the attrition rate isn't all that high. And it's just the fact that they're not able to utilize them well and not able to work in the talent that they have, either on offense or some games, if you go back to the Washington game in Week 2 where the Rams got run over, on the defensive side, where there's just no excuse. It's a matter of being able to, you know, manage a franchise in a way that provides some consistency of wins. And you guys see that from Bruce Arians, right? And it wasn't too long ago that you guys were picking at the top of the draft. But those kind of things have an effect of how you manage a franchise, not just the coaching and the play calling, but the overall strategy of how to manage a franchise week to week over the course of a 17-week NFL season. The Rams just aren't getting it done under Jeff Fisher.
So going to that, what is the sort of vibe around the team? Not necessarily around the team itself, but media-wise, around fans. How do they feel towards Jeff Fisher? Is there any sort of feeling of a hot seat? Because Fisher's one of these interesting coaches that, reputation-wise, he's known as one of the most respected coaches in the game. Yet, you look at his record, and he did have a couple of years there with the Titans, but more or less he's been a... And Bruce Arians sort of poked at it last year, so somehow, you know, doesn't matter what happens, they end up 8-8.
Yeah, and... I think there are starting to be some calls from the fans to put some pressure on that seat, and you're starting to get some people who are really getting tired of dealing with the record while at the same time dealing with the same kind of responses. And there's only so many opportunities to provide those responses to the media. But when the constant refrain is, we're a young team, we're getting better, we'll fix it, we like some of the things we're seeing, and yet you're 1-2 every single year after 3 weeks, as they have been under Jeff Fisher, 2012 to 2015, those things start to ring hollow, and at some point you're going to start losing some people on the bandwagon. That's starting to happen. But what I would say is I don't see any reason why you would fire Jeff Fisher after this year that you wouldn't have fired him last year. The idea that somehow he didn't have the pieces to get better last year just isn't true. And the fact that you've gone from a 7-win team to a 7-win team to a 6-win team, and now you're sitting at 1-2, there's just no way to justify why you would fire him. And it's not to say that they won't, and it's not to say that I wouldn't advocate it. It just seems weird that there wasn't that much of a hot seat, you know, 3 months ago, 4 months ago, 5 months ago, when the conditions are almost exactly the same. There's not a lot that's really changed year to year for the Rams outside of the names on the roster, and even the performances they're in have been pretty similar.
And you look at how the league goes, it tends to be the quarterback. It appears to me the Rams have built everything else up. They've got the stable of running backs. They've got the defense. Now, the offensive line is a different story. That's definitely a work in progress. The quarterback position, Sam Bradford, he just couldn't stay healthy. And now that he's in Philadelphia, there are still questions about what sort of talent he is. Now the Rams bring in Nick Foles. What has Nick Foles been so far? You go from Bradford to Foles. What do you see from Nick Foles so far? Obviously, you've got the one very impressive victory over Seattle to start the season where you put up 34 points. So is Nick Foles the answer? In a very small sample size from what you see, is Nick Foles the answer not just this year but moving forward?
So I guess the way I would say is for most teams, probably not. But for the Rams, he could be. Because the answer that the Rams need at quarterback doesn't have to be the answer for every team. The Rams aren't a team that needs a ton of play out of the quarterback. They just don't. They've got so many other components that they can lean on from obviously the entire defense. The special teams unit is very, very productive on all sides, whether it's kick returns, where Benny Cunningham was the best by net yards kick returner a year ago, Tavon Austin, who's still electric in the punt return game, and the coverage units, which are very good, as well as a Pro Bowl punter in Johnny Hecker and Greg Zuerlein, who can kick 65 high 60-yard field goals. They've got a ton of capability there. What they've got to get together on offense is the running game. That's what they were built to do. They drafted another running back in Todd Gurley, 10th overall in this year's draft, and they just started getting him going this week in week three. He only got 9 yards on 6 carries. That's the real issue. If you're looking for Nick Foles to be the guy to carry your team, it's not going to happen. That's why Chip Kelly was willing to get rid of him, because he knew that he didn't need Nick Foles to succeed. The Rams don't need Nick Foles to succeed. They need the other parts around him too. So is he the answer? I think the real response would be he shouldn't have to be. And if he is, then the Rams are going to be in a tough place.
Piggybacking off that, there's been talk, especially if you look at how the NFC West has gone the past couple of years, there was, Arizona had a traditionally just horrific offensive line. San Francisco, great. Seattle, pretty solid. But now it looks like Arizona has sort of taken over as the only real solid offensive line. St. Louis is starting a bunch of young guys. How many rookies is it this year that are on the starting line right now?
So it's just two. It's Rob Havenstein, who was the second rounder of the draft. He's starting at right tackle, and Jamon Brown. Actually played tackle at Louisville in college. They've moved him over to left guard. So you got two rookies. The other one you might be thinking
big,
of, Tim Barnes,
guys
at center.
But so yeah,
they're huge.
But when you look at the line, at least around here, the talk is that the Rams line is really sort of trash right now. I don't want to say that in an insulting way. The words being used around here. Obviously, that's a line that could become very good. Is it mostly, at least for the running game, is that what the problem is, that the line has not yet come together to be super consistent, as opposed to the days when Steven Jackson was putting up mad yards every year?
That would help, but I think the problem is that the line has been bipolar. They've actually been pretty damn good in offense. If you go back, and even last game against Pittsburgh, they did a good job of protecting Nick Foles, which doesn't make sense because, like you said, they're built to run the ball, and it's in that aspect that they've been abysmal. I don't know. There's not a real explanation for it because that's what they were built to do. Greg Robinson, left tackle out of Auburn, number two overall pick, 2014 NFL draft, a second and a third round pick from this year's draft to go with Roger Saffold at right guard, and they're just not winning in the run game. Now, part of it is a scheme issue. The Rams are working in some zone blocking concepts that they've never used under Jeff Fisher before, and almost everybody to a T has been vocal about how much of an adjustment it's taking. Nick Foles has said it. The running back committee has talked about it, Trey Mason and Todd Gurley, and obviously the offensive coordinator, Frank Cignetti, as well as the head coach, Jeff Fisher, have talked about it. It's taking time, and it's just not working yet. I doubt that they're going to abandon that 3 weeks in, only because it took so much time to install in the preseason. But the results aren't there, and the results aren't there for the offensive line, and they're not there for the running backs. And until that gets there, trash is a fair word. I mean, when you get 9 yards on six carries out of your number 10 overall pick, that's pretty trash.
And Todd Gurley, who's a guy that's expected, or in terms of expectation where he was drafted, is talking about, like, you're talking about a generational talent at that position, like an Adrian Peterson.
I mean, they have to be to justify a number 10 overall pick for a running back, especially when they already had Trey Mason, a third round pick, Isaiah, a former second round pick who they just cut this week, Zach Stacy, a former fifth round pick, and Trey Mason, a third round pick. I might have already said Trey Mason, I might have said him twice, but they've drafted so many running backs. The Rams had need at the position. They've had two rookies over the last 2 years, Zach Stacy in 2013 and Trey Mason in 2014, who, if they had started all 16 games in their rookie season, would have eclipsed 1,000 yards. But, you know, the Rams, like you said, thought they saw something special in Todd Gurley and spent the required value to get him. But it's one of those things where if you're not getting results out of that, the opportunity cost of what you missed out on getting can be, able to consider.
So, heading into this week with the Cardinals, what we've seen is sort of a Jekyll and Hyde type Rams team, and I, from what we can see, it's a home road thing. Why were the Rams able to be so good against Seattle, so dominant against Pittsburgh, but yet get absolutely mauled by a Redskins team that's considered to be pretty much a dumpster fire in terms of the league?
Yeah, see, this is where I need the internet or Twitter here so I can do the little shruggy guy that everybody knows. It's one of those, there is no answer. The only answer is that it's the Rams. It's the only answer is that the Rams are just so inconsistent. And here's the crazy thing, Jess. I went on record and predicted that we'd beat Seattle and lose to Washington. And, of course, everybody said that's not possible. My response was, of course it's not possible, but that's exactly what the Rams do. That's what the Rams do every year. Is you look at it and you say, there's no way they're going to do that. And then they go out and do it. There's no way that this Rams team, who started off 1-2, is going to win either at Arizona or at Green Bay. But I can almost guarantee they're going to win one of those games, because it's what the Rams always do every single year. There's no real explanation for it. It's just inconsistency. And that's been the hallmark of Jeff Fisher's era as head coach. And, there's no signs that it's going to change.
Is it a home road issue, or is it just a maturity issue? Was it a preparation issue after they come off the high of the defeating Seattle? They just, they sort of, as they say, were reading their own press clippings and just came into Washington unprepared, or really, is it more of a thing because they're a young team that it really is a big difference playing at home versus playing on the road?
It feels like the latter two. Either, the fact that they just weren't ready to play, and that you didn't have either the veteran leadership or the veteran, coaching staff who know how to manage a 17-week season and get those kind of wins and get those kind of performances, because the Rams made a game of it late. They made a game of it in the second half. The problem, they got blown out in the first half and shut out. And you can't put up those kind of first halves on the road because it's too hard to come back. But that's the kind of thing the Rams do. It's not that they really didn't have the right game plan. It's that the game got away from them so quickly, so early, that it didn't matter what the kind of adjustments they were going to make thereafter were, because they're going to be a high power offense that can come back from 17 points down and really rack up big plays. That's not what they do. But it's also, like you said, about youth and inexperience and the fact that a lot of the players that are coming into the Rams locker room only know big programs out of college and only know, you know, long, sustained periods of success. The Rams haven't had a winning record since 2003. When you talk about all the veterans that are on the team now, guys like Chris Long, James Laurinaitis, Roger Saffold, those guys have never even been on a winning team. So the veteran experience that they have is different than the veteran experience that a lot of other guys have in other locker rooms to know how to get a 6-10 team to 9-7, how to get an 8-8 team to 10-6 over the course of a 17-week season, right? I'm not saying it matters necessarily week to week, but you've got veterans in there who know this is what it takes to get us from August, from July all the way to December and come out on the other side with a postseason record. The Rams don't have anybody like that on, or nearly anybody like that on the roster, because everybody they've brought in house has only known those losing seasons, because that's all we've had for years.
And the Cardinals,
it's sad. You can cry for me. You guys can have a little bit of pity. I know. NFC West rivals, I know, but y'all can have a little pity. Come on, man.
Well, we understand too, because just a couple of years ago when Arians' first year, they came out on top 10-6, missed the playoffs, but it was an issue at the beginning of the season where Arians was preaching to the guys, hey, we are a good team, we have talent, but the players didn't really believe it, and that's how they stumbled out the gate, the come from ahead loss to the Rams in week one, and, you know, stumbling to a 3-4 start. They just didn't know how to win because they didn't really believe that they could. And since then, it's kind of been all the difference. Another thing that we noticed with, we talk about the Rams defense yet, the one thing that stands out to me is how Washington was able to run the ball so well. What is it, 182 yards they put up against the Rams defense. And this, at least this season so far through three games, the Cardinals have managed to eclipse 100 yards on the ground in each and every one of those games. They're getting production out of really pretty much everyone. Andre Ellington might be back. Chris Johnson's coming off 110-yard, 2-touchdown performance. And the Cardinals are looking, you know, they're playing. Carson Palmer, Larry Fitzgerald, Chris Johnson are all playing like it's 2009, only it's 2015. Is the Rams defense one? Is it a defense that can be run successfully against it, or is that more of a 1 week anomaly?
It's a 1 week anomaly, but you gotta bring yourself again into the bizarro logic world of the Rams. If you've got a decent running game and a decent running back like Marshawn Lynch in week one, or like Le'Veon Bell in week three, the Rams are going to do a decent job of mitigating what you get on the ground. If you've got a guy like Matt Jones, who's barely, you know, earning snaps and starting to earn time on a Washington team, he could go off for 120 yards. And it was just like last year. Last year, the Rams did a fine job dealing with Marshawn Lynch in the two games, Adrian Peterson to start the season. The better running backs that they faced throughout the year, they had good game plans and they were able to execute them. The worst game that the Rams rushing defense had last year was in, what, week three against Tampa Bay with Bobby Rainey, of all people. So it's one of those things where if you know that you've got quality running backs, the Rams too, and they're going to be able to do something about it. The problem is that you've got this inconsistency where they face the rushing attacks that they should beat, and those are the ones that give them trouble. It's not a logistician's best friend. It doesn't make a whole lot of logical sense, but it's what the Rams end up doing.
Is there any sort of lingering, fan-wise, in terms of fan support, maybe even within the locker room, sort of the unknown, is there an issue? In Arizona, at least in the hockey sphere, the Coyotes have gone through a whole bunch of turmoil about, are they staying? Are they going to be moving? Is there some of that lingering around there with the whole Los Angeles thing coming up where the NFL wants a team in Los Angeles? The Rams have come up as a possible team, Jacksonville, Oakland, San Diego. Is there an effect in terms of fan support and maybe sort of how the team views itself that they might not be in St. Louis long term?
In terms of the fans, absolutely. In terms of the team itself, there hasn't been anything to suggest that. They, you know, outwardly and publicly, they seem focused on the task at hand, albeit in a very Rams way, but not in terms of being, you know, sidewinded by that kind of issue. Although the Rams did opt to spend some time in Oxnard, which is relatively close to Los Angeles, to cross train and cross practice with the Cowboys. You may remember the big fight with Dez Bryant.
Yeah, that's all sorts of fun.
So it's one of those things where you've got an owner who is publicly threatening more or less to move the team because he's bought land, and once you own the land, do whatever you want with it. He's essentially threatening to move the team. The optics of holding a practice that close to Los Angeles are one, it's the kind of thing that it's all it's going to do is rile up the fan base. And they're riled up. They are. This would be one of the only cities, and this is not my fact, it's been pointed out by tons of people, one of the only cities that would have built a new stadium and then replaced it with a second new stadium within 25 years. That just doesn't happen in almost any other sports. But it looks like St. Louis is willing to do that. They've got a workable plan on the table for a $1 billion stadium. Ooh, on the river. It's one of those things where you look at it and you say, okay, that makes sense. That's the kind of thing you need for the 20th biggest market in the United States to maintain an NFL football team. But if you're the owner and you own the team and you own land in Los Angeles, the only thing to stop you from moving the team is the other owners, is the NFL. Excuse me. And right now, it's tough to know. It's tough to know. It depends on which reporters you really buy into, which narrative you buy into. I think the only keys that we know for sure is that it seems very likely that Stan Kroenke would be more than willing to move the team at the season's end. But it also depends on what's happening on the ground with the San Diego and Oakland Raiders and Chargers, not the cities, but the team's joint plan in Carson, California, which is also in the L.A. market, because that may be a more viable way to support Los Angeles with San Diego fans who aren't too far away and kind of combine those markets for the NFL without losing St. Louis, which is obviously what happened at the Rams.
How would the fan base react to not losing? Because this would be then the second time in the last few decades where they have lost an NFL team. Obviously, the Cardinals coming out here to Arizona, albeit that fan base was not a particularly big fan of the Bidwells at the time. So there was not much of a... Bidwells did not make themselves well-loved there in that town. But how would that affect St. Louis if they were to see not only the Cardinals leave town, but then to see the Rams leave as well?
I think it's tough because you're talking about two decades, one that, you know, was sparked by an early run into the greatest show on turf era and then kind of a 15-year decline thereafter, and they just haven't been able to get back on the mark. I think the problem is, and I say this as somebody who's not from St. Louis, I grew up in Texas, is that I worry about the precedent it would set, not only for the NFL, but across all sports, that you've got a city that is willing to build a stadium to entice a team to move there in the first place. Whatever you think about the Los Angeles market, and that's a huge division among Rams fans because you've got so many like myself who became fans of the Rams when they were in Los Angeles before moving, as well as obviously the St. Louis natives, is that now you'd have a city that is willing to put up public dollars, which is obviously the hot button issue right now when you talk about stadium development, is that they'd be willing to put up public money to support a second stadium within 25 years that the league isn't willing to support. I think that's the troubling part for teams that have existing teams in their markets. So what does that say? And obviously nobody's talking about the Cardinals moving, but I'm just using it as a hypothetical for your listeners to be able to relate. What certainty does it give you that that any new owner that might come in to buy the team wouldn't move them 5 years down the line, only because there's some more attractive market, regardless of what kind of attachments it has to the local market? If Phoenix came back and said, look, we'll build another stadium in 6 years, the owner might say, I don't care. That has nothing to do with my business interests. I want to move the team. That's not the environment that you and I grew up in for sports teams. It's a little bit different now when you've got somebody that's willing to allocate a host city, that's willing to build a new stadium for his own decision of where he wants to put a team.
And truthfully, while logistically a team in Los Angeles for the NFC West does make a lot of sense, it would be a very odd thing to happen to St. Louis, which is considered one of the best sports towns in the United States, just sure. in terms of how they, I mean, the Kansas City market, those Chiefs fans are as rabid as they get, and but granted, they've got generations there of success, but the Cardinals there for baseball. St. Louis is known as a very good sports town, and to have them suffer two team losses just seems untenable. It doesn't seem like how it's right. The whole bigger picture of public funded stadiums and sports moves, that's a completely different thing to talk about. But yeah, but
yeah, you've got a team there, like you said, it's a generational thing that's only had 20 years to build up a fan base, and for the last 12 of them, they've lost. The fact that they still have people willing to spend money on that product shows you that it's a community that cares about the team. They're not selling out the games, but the Rams haven't won. They haven't been to the playoffs in 12 years. There are people almost ready for high school that have never seen the Rams win a single season, right? Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where it's hard to condemn the fan support, and it's hard to condemn the civic support when they got a stadium ready to go. The other dynamic, without getting into too many details, because I know this is one of those issues that doesn't play all that heavily outside of St. Louis and Los Angeles and Oakland, is part of what it comes down to is the dynamics of philosophy of the owners. If you've got an owner like Dan Snyder or Jerry Jones who wants independence from the league to be able to go and run their individual team however they want and not have the rest of the NFL or the NFL league office itself tell them what to do, that's kind of where Stanky, the owner of the Rams, is looking for support, because he just wants to move the team to California because that's what he wants when he owns it. If, on the other hand, some of the more small market teams like the Pegulas up in Buffalo, Richardson out in Carolina, some of these smaller owners that favor the collective philosophy of working together as essentially a 32-member cartel on behalf of the NFL, and that what supports everybody is what supports the individual best, that's kind of what San Diego and Oakland are working toward to try to stymie Kroenke from moving the Rams. So it's one of those weird kind of political battles. There is no Game of Thrones or House of Cards that will make Stan Kroenke look interesting to the average NFL fan, but I think that's the dynamic that's really becoming clear, is that you've got the individualist philosophy that's competing against the collectivist philosophy. And right now, I don't know who's going to win, because we really have no idea what Roger Goodell's going to do until he sticks his finger in the air and decides, oh, well, today I feel like suspending Ray Rice two games. Oh, wait, I'll suspend him until he's dead 20 times. Wait a second, I'll suspend his great-grandfather. What do I need to do? Roger Goodell, help.
Oh, Roger Goodell, that's yet another conversation to have that has all sorts of facets. Let's bring it back to Rams-Cardinals. If you're looking at both teams, where are the matchups where you feel the Rams have a favorable, where do the matchups fit favorably for the Rams, and then the ones that you feel are going to be the most matchups that they're going to be the most concerning as we look at the game coming up on Sunday?
So I'll do it. We'll go defense and offense. When the Rams are on defense, when you guys have the ball, the way the Rams' defensive system works is they pretty much shut down the sidelines and the deep ball, and they've been very successful at it all year, even against Pittsburgh. But what they give you is the soft underneath zone, right in the middle of the field. So if you want to run slants, tight end curls, those kind of things, you're going to be able to get it more often than not. The real key is who wins the run game and who makes mistakes. So, you know, if you've got a little 6-yard route and you drop the ball, or, you know, that you get pressured and make a bad throw, the Rams are going to start locking down tighter and tighter. And then that 6-yard throw is only available as a 4-yard route on third down. And that's how they get off the field, or how they force people to make mistakes. The thing that I'm worried about, and we've seen this before against you guys, is that Carson Palmer is experienced enough to stay disciplined and dink and dunk his way down the field for 2, 3, maybe even 4 touchdowns, because the Rams are willing to give you that if you're willing to take it. Everybody's calling it a bend don't break defense. It's really not. It's underbelly defense. If you want to attack the short middle of the field, you can have it almost all day, and then you just got to come up big in the red zone. So that's my real concern, is that having faced you guys with this before, Carson Palmer's shown some diligence and some expertise at how to exploit it. If there's something I'm excited maybe about seeing, it's what you led off with. It's the fact that we've gotten to the quarterback against you guys. There's no excuse for why the Rams can't do it again, and that's the kind of thing that puts quarterbacks in position to make mistakes, and the Rams have been pretty adept at taking advantage of them on the defensive side. The problem is when it comes to the Rams, when they've got the ball, I don't know that there's a matchup that's all that favorable for the Rams against any team yet. Kenny Britt had a nice week last week, 7 catches for more than 100 yards, but again, the Rams scored 6 points, and when you can't string some of those catches together, to make more meaningful drives that result in points and especially result in touchdowns, those kind of stat lines aren't really that impressive. It's the kind of thing that looks nice in the fantasy game, but it's not going to make a big difference on the ultimate scoreline, because if you get one 15-yard catch every drive, I mean, that's great, but you're not sustaining any drives to get points. And the Rams haven't gotten anything out of the running game at all, and I think that's the most worrisome aspect of the entire team, is how poorly the run game has been for the Rams in 2015. Through 3 weeks, they get something there. If there's something that I'm more worried about, it's that the Rams are going to start getting desperate. And that's what we have. Nick Foles has been composed. Obviously, at the end of the game last week, he threw an interception, but it was one of those things where, okay, you get down under 3 minutes, you haven't had any offense all game, you got to try. At that point, you have to start trying to make something happen. But for the most part, you know, through three quarters, all 3 weeks, he's been very disciplined and hasn't made too many risky throws, because he wants the offense to come to the guys that, you know, it needs to go to: the running back, Jared Cook at the tight end spot, Kenny Britt as the leading wide receiver, and then wait for the home run plays to set themselves up for Tavon Austin, Chris Givens, and even Lance Kendricks, who's had a couple opportunities at tight end. So I don't know that there's a lot that Rams fans can hang their hat on offense right now. It's one of those things where you got to play in defense and wait for the offense to make it happen.
Now, we'll kind of close on this. Cardinals fans, obviously there are some names that Cardinals fans are familiar with. Obviously there's Todd Gurley, Trey Mason, you got Aaron Donald on the other side of the ball, Nick Fairley, but who should be players that the Cardinals fans keep an eye out? The guys that'll make impacts, potential impacts on the game, that Cardinals can, the Cardinals fans can kind of look to and say, oh, okay, those are the Rams.
Yeah, so it starts with Aaron Donald. He's the best player on the team. As Pro Football Focus is pushing out every single week, he's on pace to be the highest charted player they've ever had, higher than J.J. Watt. He's too disruptive in the run and the pass game, because his whole game relies on quickness. It's not like Michael Brockers or even conventional defensive tackles, where they're winning in strength and then just trying to leverage their body into a run gap or collapse the pocket. Aaron Donald wins by having the quickness of a defensive end and the hands of a linebacker. He gets by defensive tackles so fast. Sometimes he's too fast, and a lot of teams have used that to their advantage, is allowing to disrupt the pocket and then stepping up into the space. Because you're just not going to keep him out consistently out of the backfield. He's an absolute monster. On the offensive side, and maybe for points, everybody points to Tavon Austin, and I think that's fair only because with the explosive acceleration, he's got nice speed, but it's really how quick he is once he starts going. Everybody's going to point to Tavon Austin, but one weapon that I would point to that's been maybe more of an X factor is Jared Cook. Now, the problem is, he's not the most committed player on the field, and the ball's not on his side when he doesn't feel that he's the primary route, when he's not getting looked at. He can give up on plays. He can. And he's had an issue with drops in his career. But the reality is, there's a reason why he led the Rams in targets and receptions in 2014, and why I expect he certainly could be again this year, and it's because he gets open. He's a big target. The Rams like to use him down the seam, and that's where he's most comfortable, and he's a great red zone target. So he's, as much as everybody likes to point to Tavon Austin for the flashiness, Jared Cook is the more, and I say this with quotes around it, reliable target, because they're going to use him in higher quantity, even if the quality's not that high.
And, well, when we saw firsthand over the past couple of years, how Jared Cook can hurt a defense because of his matchup, it's just a matter of his career has been inconsistent, to say the least.
And I'm sure, like, Cardinals fans who own him in fantasy would know, he may go for a 4 or 5 catch game for 100 yards and 2 touchdowns on Sunday. You won't hear from him again until Thanksgiving. It's just the Rams way, man.
Now, how do you see? Let's kind of throw some prediction stuff. I know we'll have some content written wise. Cardinals fans, as we always do, we exchange 5 questions. Maybe have some of the cross content stuff on the sites. Turf Show Times, one of the great blogs of our SB Nation network, and even kind of and especially one of the things is in terms of the NFC West, we feel the most brotherly towards them. Maybe it's because of the lack of, it's a couple of things, Kurt Warner's connection, maybe it's the fact that they haven't been super good yet over the last few years, but we don't despise Rams fans the way we despise 49ers fans or Seahawks fans, and so there's almost a feeling of friendliness, of rivaled friendliness, or even just a friendly rivalry, because As we all know, the 49ers fans and Seahawks fans are some of the worst.
I like that idea for a motto. St. Louis Rams fans, socially acceptable to a degree.
Yes. So how do you see this game playing out? If we're going to throw up projections on their best case and worst case on for the Rams side.
I think part of the difficulty is that last year in 2014, despite the lack of weapons, the Rams were actually really good at scripting their early game offense. The problem was that Brian Schottenheimer, the offense coordinator, struggled to make some second half adjustments, which might have been part of the reason that he's now the offense coordinator at the University of Georgia, and the Rams promoted Frank Cignetti to hold down the offensive coordinator spot. And that success from early game scripting hasn't come about especially in the last 2 weeks. So if there's anything I'm predicting, I think it's going to be an expected play, maybe special teams, and not necessarily from the Rams. It could be from the Cardinals as well. That's going to throw the game off. Because I think if both teams settle in, I have a feeling it could end up being just like the Steelers game, where you guys have maybe some early success on offense, then the Rams defense settles down. The Rams offense is struggling to get anything together in any cohesive way to extend drives, and it gets to be one of these low scoring games, just like 12-6 last year, which, you know, I'm sure you guys wouldn't have a problem.
One of the ugliest games all season. It was a terrible game for football.
For you guys, for us, it was the same game that we play every 3 weeks, and we just played again in week 3. Because that's the kind of ball that the Rams are designed to play. They're just designed to get a little bit more out of the offense. And I could see that being this kind of game, regardless of who wins, is one of those grinded out, sloppy on offense, hard-nosed on defense, and maybe one special teams play is really the big difference.
All right. Well, that'll wrap up this show of Revenge of the Birds Radio, our preview show with 3K from Turf Show Times. Of course, head over to Turf Show Times. Most of you listeners, most of you readers are already members of the site as well. But if you're not, head on over there, become a member of the site so that you can participate in some of the conversations with Rams fans. Now 3K is your, what is it? You've got 3K, is it underscore before and after on Twitter? Is that what your Twitter handle is?
It's at 3K underscore.
At 3K underscore.
But don't follow me. Follow Turf Show Times. I'm boring. I'm nothing.
Follow both of them. Follow both of them. But yeah, Turf Show Times and at 3K underscore. And you'll definitely get your share of, and as much as you might want to just follow Cardinals stuff, it's also good to be able to hear of things that are going on in the division and the Rams. But 3K, I really appreciate the time as always. I'm sure we will talk to each other later in the season when the teams meet up in St. Louis. Whether it is you showing up as a guest on Revenge of the Birds Radio or me on one of your shows, it'd be great to hear from you again. And hopefully, if in terms of the division, we'd love for the Rams to be number 2 and the other 2 teams to just sort of stink all year. I prefer that. So thanks for beating the Seahawks. That's been very beneficial for us.
Rams would have no problem. Rams would have no problem coming in second. Thank you for having me again. Thanks to all the listeners at Revenge of the Birds. Muchas gracias para todos los jugadores de Caneros y los, I don't know how to say Cardinals, but thanks for having me, all you guys, too.
Well, appreciate it, 3K, and have a wonderful day. Good luck at the game this week, and we'll talk to you later. You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.